All right.
All right, Commissioner.
See? Shoot. Did you want to talk about this at some point?
Right away.
Oh, okay. Okay. Good afternoon. Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Julie Fedorchak, Chairman of the Public Service Commission. We are on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for a work session on case number PU-14-842 on April 23rd. I don't have any real big opening comments. I'll come back to that. Well, we're basically here because the company has filed a request with us to possibly change the criteria of our notice. Is that correct, guys? We'll get into all the specifics here, but before we do that, I want to invite my colleagues to make opening comments, starting with you, Commissioner Christman.
Thank you, and no opening comments in general. As far as what we're meeting about, but since this is really our first work on this case, action on it, I wanted to point out something, and I drafted a letter to Mr. Nitschke, and it's been docketed, so it's on the record, but it's only from this morning, so you wouldn't probably have likely have seen it, so that's why I want to bring it up. The general point of it is having to do with conflicts of interest. And, have talked to Alana and reviewed the state laws concerning bribery and undue influence in public contracts and other conflicts of interest, and also our commission conflict of interest policy. And the reason I have done that in this case is in the application, as I went through it, one stretch of this pipeline gets very close to my mother-in-law's property. In fact, and just to be clear here, it's generally the area between 0.67.5 and 68, although they don't line up precisely. But for a half mile there, this pipeline follows the south side of a quarter line, and she owns the north side of that quarter line. So it's not technically on it, but the study area would be on her land. In reviewing, especially our policy, which I think is most on point here, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but most of the important language is in what I have had docketed. But I'll read a partial quote here. No commissioner, commission employee, or agent shall participate in a commission decision if a conflict of interest would be involved. A conflict would arise when the commissioner has a financial interest other than a de minimis interest or other interest directly or substantially affected by the commission decision. If this were ultimately the route were changed some and it ended up on our land, I really believe, you know, it wouldn't meet that standard as to be substantial. And so I don't think it would be a factor. However, the part about the immediate family is defined in our policy as an individual spouse and persons who are claimed as dependents for income tax purposes. Clearly, that does not arise as immediate family per our policy. So even, you know, I don't want to get in the middle of this case and then have something come up. That's why I wanted it clear for everyone involved in case one of my fellow commissioners or anyone else involved in the case feels differently about it and we need to do more work involving this. But at the time, I feel that the way it's currently laid out, or if it would end up on her property, I don't feel it's a conflict of interest. So that's how I'll move forward, unless I hear differently from someone else. There is some law on how someone would challenge that if they want to challenge that I do have a conflict. So that's all laid out clearly.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Christman. I agree with your assessment and don't have any desire to call for something different. And Hearing none from Commissioner Kalk.
I was ready for my turn in opening comments.
Now you may have your turn with opening comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with yours and Commissioner Christman's assessment of the conflict, and I appreciate Randy doing the work on this because it really is it's the right thing to do. And the only comments I would have is that I definitely have some thoughts on the issue when the time comes about what we might be asked to do today. So
yeah, for sure.
Whenever the time comes.
Okay. I'd like to just turn it over to both Jack Shue and Julie to kind of walk through what has happened to this point with this case and what the company's seeking, and then we can kind of go from there.
And Commissioner Fedorchak, this is Zach Pelham on the phone. I'm calling in from the airport, and unless Julie or Jack want to really jump in, I'll just summarize where we're at, if that's okay.
Perfect, Zach. Sorry about that. I heard you were on here, but you weren't sitting in front of me, so...
No, that's perfectly fine. How this meeting came about, just a brief introduction. Prior to the notice of hearing and going out on March 25th, Mr. Biella, attorney for the company, contacted me regarding completion issues regarding some of the surveys. It indicated at the time that the wetland survey was about 63% done, habitat assessment wildlife study survey was about 66% complete, and the Class 3 was about 66% complete. So we had an internal staff discussion. I believe you, Commissioner Fedorchak, was involved with that discussion, and it was decided that the application could be deemed complete, subject to and conditioned upon prior to 10 days of the first hearing, which is set for May 28th in Manhattan, that the wetlands and water body field survey report, the wildlife inventory field survey report, the habitat assessment field survey report, and the tree and shrub inventory report be filed with the commission. And subsequent to that being issued, we had some follow-up communication. And stop me if anyone wants to interject. Are we okay so far?
We're good. I don't see any objections.
Subsequent to that, we had a meeting request from the company to meet internally, and myself and Julie Prescott met with the company and its representatives, including Mr. Biella, on April 1st. And the company expressed that they had some concerns about the requirements that they perceived in the notice of hearing, simply because they had some access issues. Some of the landowners were not allowing access to some of the properties that they were looking at for routing and doing the corridor studies. We had a conversation. We took it back and discussed again internally with myself, Pat Fawn, and Julie Prescott. And I sent a follow-up email to Mr. Biella, explaining to him that if the company would like to put in writing its position and where specifically it is at as far as all of these surveys, including the Class 3, that the commission would take it up at this work session, and that's what we did. We agreed to a work session. The company actually did request a meeting on April 28th. I'm not sure whether or not this work session will take care of that request or not. It may, depending on the wishes of the commission, but basically, we requested that something in writing be basically a motion for reconsideration be submitted. Yesterday, filed with the commission was a letter outlining by Mr. Biella the company's position and where it is at currently with these surveys. It reports that the Wetlands Water Body Field Survey Report, Wildlife Inventory Field Survey Report, and the Habitat Assessment Field Survey Report, they are currently 87% complete, so that's a step up from the mid-60s, low-60s that were previously in March. And they anticipate completion on all accessible tracks by May 1st for these surveys, so that they would be able to meet the deadline that was in the notice of hearing, the contingent requirement that it be filed to deem the application complete. Of course, there are some issues with access that they explained later in this letter at the second-to-last paragraph. It states, I'll just read it, at the present time, Dakota Access is experiencing denial of landowner permission to complete surveys on 8% of the route within North Dakota. Therefore, by the May 18th deadline, Dakota Access will have 92% of all surveys required in the notice of filings and notice of hearings complete. I should also note, too, the tree shrub inventory report is 89% complete on the entire route at present, and they anticipate completion on all accessible tracks before Monday, April 27th, with a report believed to be filed for accessible tracks on May 11th. The cultural survey reports, they indicate in their letter yesterday that they are 73% complete at present. They currently have 9 crews operating this week and will have 11 by the end of next week. They anticipate completion of all accessible tracks by May 20th, with a formal report expected to be available by June 20th. So that is really where we're at, and I'll stop there and open it up for specific questions. I will just add one thing. I think what really needs to be discussed today, and certainly the commission can direct the discussion, I'm just suggesting this, but is whether or not this can, you know, basically, can we go ahead and accept the application, deem it complete, and with the knowledge that, look, there's an issue that the company has raised. There are some landowners who are not allowing access, and they're going through that. I know that, you know, whether or not they do this or not, I don't know, but I do know that they do have eminent domain ability in North Dakota. They have filed the paperwork with the commission and also have that authority under the FERC regulation. So whether or not that happens, you know, I don't know, but that is a possibility. My suggestion, and I ran it past Alana this morning as well as Pat and Julie Prescott, was that we proceed with the hearings, and then if there are some objections, nothing ever prevents the commission from holding a follow-up kind of, for lack of a better word, a wrap-up hearing if at the end there are objections to the fact that certain surveys are not complete or were not available at a particular time. That could be done, and that could, in my mind, is a reasonable compromise in this instance. The other thing I would note is there are, and Julie Prescott could perhaps speak more to this, there are prior precedences to this this type of request being asked. The Sandpiper Pipeline was, as I understand it, and Julie can correct me, was about the same status as we are right now, and that was allowed to proceed. So okay. I know I said a couple minutes ago I'd stop talking. Now I will.
All right. Thanks, Zach. One question I have is, I don't have our notice in front of us. Did we include the cultural resources studies?
In the notice, we did not. And that was discussed before, and what was decided at the time amongst staff in consultation, I believe, with you, Commissioner, okay, that the prior precedent of the Class 3 not having been 100% completed would be allowed the hearing would allow it to be, you know, to go forward with the understanding that as much as possible would be provided. And we do have now that they are going to complete that which they have access to by May 20th, which is in advance of the first hearing. They won't have the final report, so we won't have SHPO concurrence, but we have handled these situations in the past.
What will we have by May 20th on that? And I realize we didn't include that in our order, but will we have anything?
We will have 92% of the entire application from this letter is what is indicated.
I mean on the cultural resources survey.
As I understand it, we will have that which is completed, you know, up until that point.
But what will it be if it's not a formal report? What will we have?
The letter was not specific as to specifically what would be provided. I can certainly follow up with the company's attorney and see specifically what is going to be provided. I would imagine that what it has, it will provide to the commission and file at that time. I can't imagine. I just simply can't imagine that they would not file that which what they have to update it as near as possible as what they have complete.
In my opinion, the reason for one of the big reasons for requiring these studies 10 days in advance is to give the public an opportunity to look at them and comment about what's in them, and that's even included in law that's what the public has the opportunity to do. So I guess from my perspective, the 92%, you know, it's hard for them to, it's like the chicken and the egg. They can't get the service. If they can't get the access, they can't get the access without perhaps getting further down in the permitting process. So I'm somewhat comfortable with the 92% and the efforts that the company has made to meet that deadline. Julie, can you tell me, before I turn it over to Randy and Brian, do you tell me what the percentage was with Enbridge? I was thinking it was more like 98 and 99% complete, but... You're going to need a microphone, too. You find it. I highlighted it this morning.
I believe it was in the 80s.
By the hearing?
When we went to the hearing, by the middle hearing, they were talking about only 27 miles out of 300, which would be like 9%, had not been.
I know you have a chart. Why don't you just go ahead and take the time to find that? I thought we looked at that last week.
While you're looking for that, the question I would queuing up is the notices, were they different in the two? Because the one question I have is a notice says that. So I agree with what you're saying, but I want to make sure we don't have something that we're, because the notice said that, that we have to follow that or re-notice.
Right.
Commissioner, I'm sorry for interrupting. If this is Zach here, I could address that if that's okay.
Sure. Please do, Zach.
The notice is worded in such a way, and I've discussed as well with Pat, Julie, and Alana, and we're of the opinion, and we're comfortable with the notice covering what we're discussing. It states, a condition on receiving from the applicant 10 days prior to the first hearing, in this case, the wetlands and water body field survey report, the wildlife inventory field survey report, the habitat assessment field survey report, and tree and shrub inventory report. It's not specific as to, the 92% or 100%. You know, if we want to be out of the absolute abundance of caution, we could certainly re-notice and republish everything. That can be done. We have the time to do that. It would have to be done, next week. I think I calculated early May is when we would have to have that done. So it would have to be pretty quick to meet that 20 days prior to and within 20 days of two times being published. But it could be done.
Randy, do you have any thoughts or questions?
Well, I'm wondering if Julie has the answer to your previous question before we move on to the next thing. It looks like she maybe does.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. There's a supplemental filing in the case from February 2014, and it indicated 91% for cultural resources and 84% for the various biological resource field surveys. So that was before we went to hearing.
That was months before, though, because these were in the summer. I saw last week with you a chart that... It was like this. Yep.
We had requested some additional information from the company.
This is Enbridge.
From Enbridge, correct. And initially, at the very first filing, the cultural resources were 75% complete, and they had told us they would be 99% complete by the end of 2013, which was in advance of our hearings. As far as the wetlands and water bodies, grassland, and so forth, they were 92 and 93%, and they indicated that they would have been 98 and 99% complete prior to the hearings.
But we didn't actually get a follow-up prior to the hearing.
We did not.
Okay.
Did our notice in the Enbridge say that they had to specifically file it 10 days before like we did in this notice?
We said seven days, but yes, we did.
But okay, so we did.
We
that.
Did.
Okay.
And I don't know that notice indicated anything specific about percentages, though.
No, right.
I don't know,
correct.
Julie, if you have that.
It did not.
Julie Prescott. Okay.
We based the notice that we did for Dakota Access, right, we used the Enbridge notice as our template for that. It didn't complain.
Right.
It did not contain percentage of completion.
Okay. Any other thoughts, Randy?
Well, I have some questions to make sure that I've kind of taken notes correctly here. When we previously issued the order, most of these surveys were about two-thirds done roughly, right, Zach?
Yes.
And now they're about 87% done.
That's correct.
And they expect that in regards to the wetlands and the wetland wildlife inventory and the habitat surveys, that they'll be 92% done by the 1st of May.
92% for the entire project, 100% done for the portions that they have access to.
Right.
For the portions they don't have access to, they can't complete because they don't have access to, is how I understand it.
Understood. And then the different one is the cultural inventories, which they expect to have all the accessible properties done by May 20th instead of May 1st, right?
That is correct, sir.
Okay. And then when we're talking about 92%, those being the accessible properties, is that 92% of property owners, or is that 92% of the total miles within the state?
It is the total miles, so 92% of the entire project, so not 92% of those that they have access to.
So not that this is the case, but just to make sure I'm clear, conceivably that could be one owner that just happens to own 8% of the whole mileage.
I suppose that certainly is possible, yes.
Okay. And then lastly, I think this is my last question. If I understand you right, you feel that our order is written in such a way that as long as they have these studies done on the accessible property within the time limit ahead of the hearing, that is acceptable and that we don't need to change the order if that's our goal, correct?
That's my opinion, yes.
Okay, and you know, I don't know what the line now.
It would be the notice, just to clarify. Change the notice.
Correct.
The order.
Correct. So now I'm just making my opinion known. I don't know where the line is on this. If we were sitting here and the company was saying we're going to have about 67% of it done, I don't think I'd find that satisfactory.
Mm-mm.
You know, I don't think that would indicate a very strong effort. I think that 92% on a project like this, I realize they're not going to get 100%. There's going to be some people who are going to drag that out longer. And so I think this is, I'm fine with this. However, just in looking at potential other cases, I don't know that I want our orders to be such that whatever our motions to be that whatever percentage they come up with, if they say that's the best they can do, that that's automatically fine either. So
I agree with you.
But in this case, I'm comfortable with that. But I wonder, does the company disagree with Zach's opinion and feel that they can't safely move forward on this without it getting appealed or something if we don't change that?
They want to move forward with the hearings. Is my understanding. Yeah.
They want to move forward, but do they feel they need us to change the wording before they...
Oh.
You know, I think where the suggestion of the wording change, where that genesis was, is I corresponded with Alana on this, and she asked the question whether or not it had to be done. My first reaction was, yes, maybe it should be. But upon further reflection and talking with staff, if we want to be, I guess at this point we have the luxury of time, so we probably should just clarify the notice of hearing so that it indicates that that we're expecting all of the accessible areas for those reports to be filed 10 days in advance. Something along those lines.
Well, then we really are establishing for future what we're going to
be? I'm don't mean to interrupt. I apologize. I have a tendency to do that. It's a bad habit. I'm sorry, Commissioner.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, look, I am comfortable with how the notice of hearing and notice of filing is as stated right now. And the reason why is if there is perhaps some type of challenge by someone, a landowner, an entity, my opinion is there is always the ability to hold a hearing upon a completed, 100% completed surveys, Class 3, all the other surveys, and to hold a hearing on those portions that were not previously completed if there are issues with it. Now, I understand that probably is not the best case, you know, because it requires another hearing, but it is a compromise of the situation that, look, it's kind of like you said, Commissioner Fedorchuk, it's a chicken or the egg. If there's not access permitted to the company and they have to go through and possibly do eminent domain or possibly further negotiations with these folks, it is a compromise. So I'm long-winded way of saying I am comfortable with how the notice is presently. I don't think that we need to do anything else to it.
Well, then I'm pretty comfortable with it, too. If they have access to 92% of those lands and they get these reports done on those properties, I think that's enough for us to move forward with our hearing.
Okay, I agree. I think that, and it is something to think about in terms of what that threshold is going to be moving forward. I think it's very appropriate that we require them to have these studies filed. If you look at, you know, the law and what is considered, what, you know, is listed as an application for certificate, you know, a summary of any studies which have been made of the environmental impact of the facility is one of them, a description of the merits and detriments of the location identified, and an analysis with supporting data showing the reasons why the preferred location is best suited, mitigated measures, and an evaluation of the proposed site corridor, you know, with regard to specific criteria. Those are all requirements on the application. So it's important that we have those requirements met to the best of the company's ability, and, you know, so all of their accessible lands, I think, does that. And then when you look at the public hearing sections of law, we shall hold a public hearing, and at the public hearing, any person may present testimony or evidence relating to the information provided in the application, the criteria developed pursuant to Section 49.2205.1, and the factors to be considered in us issuing an order. So I think, you know, there again, if the information isn't filed, the public can't see it, and they can't comment at the hearing. And so I think that it's important that we have this criteria established. If the company meets this, you know, provides all the studies for the land that they can have access, that they have access to prior to the hearing, I think that that's an acceptable standard. You know, if we moved forward in a future case, if it was, you know, 20% outstanding and they didn't have access to 20% of the line, I don't know, we might have to think differently. I think so. For this case, I'm comfortable with this threshold. Brian?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one kind of off-topic, Vac. You said this is eminent domain under FERC. What makes this one different than a regular intrastate line? Is it because it's interstate and the volume that makes it eminent domain under FERC?
Well, I think it's going to be interstate, though.
Well, of course.
It this goes from, you know, near Stanley all the way down to and over to Illinois.
But maybe let's you and I visit next week and you can educate me just in that process, because I didn't quite know
well,
how that worked.
You might educate me a little bit too, but I do have an email from Mr. Biella indicating that they do have this. And they did also file the paperwork with the commission for in-state eminent domain as well. So they have both.
Okay. And then the only thing I had for my colleagues is that I agree with both of you. I'm fine with this. I would like to leave open the possibility, though, if we have the first couple of hearings and it's clear that what has been represented here in field studies is may not exactly what's panned out when it comes to completion, because there's a lot of the studies don't get completed and all those things that we would maybe have a fourth hearing when everything's complete. Because we're not going to be able to build this thing, if approved, until the SHPO concurs it, and the SHPO is not going to concur until they've done all the studies.
That's absolutely correct.
So I do believe we need to keep pushing forward because of the chicken and the egg. But I would just like that if we have the first couple of hearings and it's clear that there's more out there, that we retool another work session and notice a fourth hearing. I don't see a need for it now, but I just leave that possibility open.
It's a good plan.
I think that's a good point as well.
Okay. Anything else, staff?
I don't have anything further. I apologize for not being there in person. I'm headed to St. Louis for a deposition tomorrow, so I'm glad it worked out, though, so I could appear on phone.
Okay. And I'm just going to peek back at Alana to your – all right, with all of this. Okay. She's got the memory for precedent dating back. Okay.
Just so the commissioners are aware, I'm sorry again, but the staff did discuss, you know, the precedent in setting, and it's it was definitely discussed heavily. So I just wanted you to know that.
Good. Thank you, Zach. Brian has a closing thought.
Just a thought to our staff and to any of the company listening out there, that the one thing that did kind of rile me a little bit was the company asking to talk directly to the commissioners. I did not like that at all. I think this is the way it's handled. The company puts in what they want. They let our staff do what they're supposed to do, and then the staff briefs it to us. But the company shouldn't be trying to run over our staff. And that's what I kind of felt here a little bit is, we want to talk to the commission. Well, you want to talk to the commission, you put in a letter what you want and let our staff do it, and we talk it through. So that's just thank our staff for doing their job. And don't you guys do what you do, and you do it well, so thank you.
Yeah, the letter really clarified everything, and that's what was ultimately needed and helped move this down the road. So, okay, I think that concludes the work session on PU 14-842.
Okay, thank you. I'm hanging up now.
Thanks, Zach.
Bye now.
Safe travels.